This seminar by Daryl Wenger, titled Caring for Your Sound System, is made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. It was recorded at our Worship God 2008 conference. Daryl oversees the sound ministry at Living Hope Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
My name is Daryl Wenger from Living Hope Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I've been asked to lead this conference. I'm sorry, not the conference, the seminar at this conference to help those of us that are working with equipment on a week-to-week basis, that we would take care of it, and it would be useful for many years. I do have to acknowledge some folks, information that I'll be using that are in my notes from Dave Wilcox, who you may have been introduced to already here from Covenant Life, Jim Cowan, who's a real technical dude from this church, and also I had the privilege of being at a WFX conference earlier this year. It's a church technology national conference. I think there's another one happening this fall in Texas. And just was benefited from the seminars that I sat in, and some of it applies, is applicable. And so I included it and just want to acknowledge that some of it came from there. And also from experience. I brought my box, a box of goodies. I'm hoping that from some of my mistakes, you will learn not to make the same ones, and that would be beneficial to you. So, caring for your sound system, subheadings of buying, maintaining, and upgrading, and hopefully we'll touch on each one of those throughout this hour. When I looked over my notes, I realized there is a lot of stuff here and a lot of tangents that I would just love to run off on. I'm going to try to keep it to this. You may have questions. And so I would encourage you to either see me, Jim Cowan, Dave Wilcox, or at the tech lunch tomorrow. If this seminar spurs a question, make sure you grab somebody maybe around you and try to get an answer for it. So I guess you'll notice there's a typo in my first point, We Care called. There's two ways to correct this. One, you can take your pen and scribble out the C. Or if you want to put a comma after care or some other form of punctuation, I don't know which one works. I'm into the three dots, dot, 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 in my emails these days. I don't know how to put sentences together, so I just stick three dots, and then hopefully it'll make sense. So if you want to put three dots there, and I don't know, this may have been God-ordained, We Care. I care about you guys, and it's part of the reason that I'm here. We care about the finances that folks that are working 40 hours, 50 hours a week are giving to the church, hard-earned money. I care about the equipment that I'm having the privilege to work with. So anyway, that may not have been an accident. That may have been providential. We care. We're called to be good stewards of God's resources. Looked up the word steward in dictionary.com and picked the first two. Steward is a person who manages another's property. Second was a person who has charge of a household of another, and that include buying, obtaining food, etc. So one of the reasons that I am privileged to work with the tech equipment at our church is the fact that I get to play with toys I could never afford. There's just no way my personal budget would allow me to go out and buy a $5,000 digital console. I mean, there is no way, but I get to play with one. Used to be on a weekly basis, but thanks to my good folks from my church who are our engineers, Nicolene and Chris, I get to mix one time in August. So, which is a good thing because I can't do it all myself. But it's not my equipment. It belongs to Living Hope Church. It belongs to, loosely, to the worship team, to the pastor of the church, and of course, obviously, to the kingdom of God. So the equipment that we have, we're only temporarily being asked to manage. That could be in the use of it, but also, as we'll talk about here a little bit, in the purchasing of. We are stewards. We get to buy or have an influence in what's being bought. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. The equipment that we work with are just tools. Kingdom of God is about people. Kingdom of God about the truth of the gospel and the word of God. The toys that we get to play with are tools to make that happen. And as you would notice, over the years, if you look at church history, the amount, percentage of the budget in a church that's been set aside for these type of toys, these tools, has been increasing. If you think back years ago when you're in a big building, a big cathedral, you may have had a podium without a microphone because the building was structurally designed so that the voice would project. Then maybe you decided that wasn't loud enough, and so they put one microphone with a little three-channel, four-channel mixer, and so you put it in the building, and it lasted for 10, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, and you did not look at a sound budget every year. It was just maybe when the building was built or 10, 15 years down the road, and it's like, maybe we should upgrade this. These days, with contemporary worship, budgets for sound, for lighting, for video have been increasing the percentage. So, which means there's more value that we're responsible for. If we drop it in breaks, it is more money. I would encourage us, as we work with equipment, to view the equipment that we're using, even though we didn't buy it, didn't come out of our budget, view it as your own, as if you did purchase it. I don't know, when you were 16, 17 years old from Pennsylvania, we can get our license at 16. I drove my dad's pickup truck for the first year. Then I bought my car, I think at 17. And I don't know about you, but I treated my car a lot differently than I treated my dad's pickup truck. It's because I owned the car. I had to put the money into it. I had to pay insurance, gas, and all that stuff. So the temptation is, I think, there, that if we didn't put the money into it, if we didn't take owner responsibility for it, we may have the temptation of not actually taking the care that we normally would if we had to buy it. So I'd encourage us to try to view it as though we own it, we're responsible for it. D in that first heading is a quote. This is about less to do with how much money is saved, but more to do with how much money is not wasted. As we get into this buying area, a lot of times for me, growing up in a German Mennonite family, we're frugal. We're looking for how to pinch that penny, making sure we don't spend any more than we need to get the job done. There have been decisions made where it actually costs more in the long run. And so I'd like us, as we look at this next topic, to be thinking more about how much money we, not so much how much we're saving, but how much money we're not wasting in some of these decisions. But just for my benefit, to know who's here, how I can maybe gear our discussion, just a little survey. I could probably guess the answer to this question, but how many of you are involved in more of a traditional setting, service, choral, organ, piano, meetings, worship services? Okay, the rest of you, contemporary, you got the trap kit, bass, guitar, horns, the whole works. Or maybe not the whole works, but more of the contemporary side. Installed versus portable. We've been a portable church for 20 years and bought some land, and now we're in the process of designing a building, which is exciting. But so we're making that switch from a portable to an install. But how many of you are portable? You have somebody setting up your equipment every week. Some of you have to pack it in the trailer. How about, and the rest of you are installed? You get to walk in, hit the switch, everything lights up. Everything's on the stage, ready to go. Not quite that easy. We like to think that's the way it will be when we have our building. And this probably was answered out in the tech lunch. Small versus large. A small church has different dynamics to it in comparison to like a large church. And I was interested to see that most of the folks in the tent were 300 and under. Is that true? 300 and under? Over 300? A few over 8, I think, was the next. We have a few here. Okay. I come from a portable. That's where our history is. That's where my head wants to track. So I'll try to make sure that we do look at a few of the install stuff as we're going through this as well. So let's talk about buying. First of all, who makes the choices of what equipment you buy. And this is an important one. You could have a creative pastor or a worship leader that reads worship magazine or gets the worship DVDs and sees something new and flashy and says, I need one of those. Could be who's influenced purchasing in your church. Maybe the budget determines. Maybe because there's not much money in the sound or tech budget, and so that really defines what you can actually afford. Or maybe there's lots of money, and so there's choices made that are not really wise choices, but just because the money's there, we're going to go pick this piece over another piece, more because the money's there rather than the functionality. How about you as the tech director? Do you get to make the decisions? Are you in a church where you're the guy that knows the most about sound, and so these decisions have just sort of been given over to you, where you're given an amount of money, just go spend it, make it happen type of thing? The determining factor is what the church really needs. And I would propose that it's the first three. It's a combination. You as a tech director or on the tech team offering ideas, talking to the creative worship leader or the pastor, and keeping the budget in mind and coming up with what would serve the facility, the church where you serve. This all comes down to good planning. And this is an area we could just talk about. I sat in a seminar for an hour and a half on this one. Somehow we have to find out what the needs are. So in our case, it's going to be doing a needs assessment. What are the different ministries that are involved? Because we're starting from scratch. We're building a building. And so that is a good time to go evaluate what are the needs of the children's ministries, of the worship team, of possibly if you have a gym department, what's the gymnasium? What kind of sound system is going to be needed in that building? So there's a lot of questions that need to be asked at this point in the game. I would encourage you to dream big, but also be realistic. One of my tendencies is, because I'm more on the frugal side, is I like, nah, we can't afford it. Nah, we don't need it. But realizing that maybe it would be beneficial to have some of those nice toys that would serve the church in a better way than just coming in just under whatever the budget can afford. So I would encourage you to dream big. You've done these. My brain just went. When you ask, okay, let's just open it up and just write down ideas. What's that called? Brainstorming. Yes. Have your brainstorming sessions. You might want to preface it by saying, just to let you know, we're not going to be able to afford all these, but let's hear what they are. Start out by brainstorming, and then with discussions, you'll be able to get to the point where the budget probably will have a big effect on what you actually can afford. And along with contemporary worship services and the requirements to do those right is a big price tag and equipment that's being designed for those that are costly. And so even though you might say sky's the limit, or your creative worship leader comes and says, look, money's not going to be an issue, we want the best, probably in reality that's not true. There's probably a limiting factor, and the budget will define. I would discourage the notion that we can add it later in a design of a building. When you're pouring concrete is the time to lay conduit. It's not after you have the concrete, you have the pews in the auditorium and the chairs, and then it's like, you know what, I wanted one run from here to there. That's not the time to be digging up the carpet and using jackhammers. So there is something to say about thinking ahead of what the potential could be of what this facility may do in the future, even though we can't afford to get there now, and adding some of that infrastructure at that point. conduits, maybe some cable runs or Cat 5 runs. Put the strings in the conduit so that when you decide to do it, you can pull things. I should mention on the other side, though, is you don't want to go overboard on this. An example would be maybe you decided we like the idea of three screens that we saw here. And so we are going to design the walls so that now that we can only afford one, we'll put one in the center and we'll put the framework for the other ones and we'll buy the screens and the projectors later. And this was a year ago when everybody, not everybody, most people were doing a 4x3 aspect ratio. Well, now we're a 16x9 aspect ratio, and it's like, oh, we put a hole there. We designed it, but now the screen doesn't fit. So there is a balance to planning ahead. You want to make sure that you're not building something that will not facilitate. We don't know the future of where technology is going or what the needs will be in the future, so we make our best guesses. But just to let you know, we want to be a little bit of a caution on that side. We don't want to lay everything of every possibility in the building because there may be some changes in the future. Number four, utilize a professional contractor. I did read a quote. This is from a book, F. Alden Everest. It's the Complete Handbook of Public Address Systems. I think it was written in 1978. He says that every church installs four sound systems in their lifetime. The first one is the lowest budget. So when you design your building, you're looking for the lowest budget sound system and you put it in and you find out, it's not quite meeting our needs. Nobody's really happy with it. So the second sound system is a well-intended volunteer in the church that says, you know what, I think I can do better than that. So the leadership says, sure, go ahead. So they rip out that sound system and they put in this other sound system. And, well, unfortunately, the guy didn't know much about acoustics, and so it doesn't really sound any better. So the third sound system, they finally decide, you know what, we just got to pay somebody to come in and do this right. So they go find either the closest or a recommended professional sound company, and they come in and they put a system in, and guess what? It's a great sound system, but it doesn't meet the needs of the church. Because a lot of times they don't take the time to actually sit down and find out, well, what is it that the church does? Some of the professional local sound companies put it that way. So the fourth sound system is the one where somebody actually took time, professional sound company, works with professional sound system installs, sat down and talked to somebody about the needs of the congregation. What are you actually going to be doing in the building? Takes that time. So I would hope that we as a church, as we're designing ours, and if you are designing churches, we'll get to upgrades later, that it will not take four systems until you get to the point where you're happy with one. But I would suggest at least getting some consulting from a professional contractor. I'm one of those guys who thinks I know a little bit about sound, and I'm not sure what my role is going to be in this install yet, but I'm hoping I'm not number two, the in-house expert who puts a system in, and somewhere later they're going to say, nope, that didn't work. Do you have a question?
Well, I was just going to mention too, don't necessarily listen to the general architect or the sound.
Just had a discussion at lunch about that. That is a whole topic in itself, but the comment was you don't necessarily want to just rely on the general contractor. There are acousticians and acoustical contractors or engineers that can help in that. And I'm going to should mention that I'm hoping that I can get through this, that we'll have some time for Q&A at the end. So I'm interested in some of your questions. Number five, I'd encourage you to stand your ground on quality if you foresee that going cheap will cost more in the long run. And a lot of times, this only comes with experience when you've actually bought something cheap and it's like, you know what, that just didn't last very long. We would have been better off buying one good one rather than now we're on our third cheap one. I'll use an example. I'm really not wanting to bust on the local Radio Shack, because I frequent Radio Shack pretty regularly when I'm in need of something quick, and definitely have their place. But one of the things that we bought for a while was their extension, their headphone extension cables. And honestly, I can say, I think the average Sunday, it was three that they worked. You buy brand new, you'd unpack them, plug it in, they'd work that Sunday. And some of them would not work the next Sunday. Or I'm saying the average was three, and we eventually just threw them all out. And I had a company build me extension cables, 30-foot extension cables that cost $125 a piece. And we're still using them. I mean, they're just rugged. They have this little box with a volume control on them. So granted, that's a lot of money up front, but if I was still using the cheaper cables, I would have spent that by now. So it's just an example. There are certain things in your system that you're going to want to say, you know what, I'm going to stand my ground on this. I know this is cheaper. I know this is what you're recommending, but from experience, we can either buy one of these now and replace it, or we can, by changing our mind and going with something a little more, with a little more quality in the long run, we're going to actually be further ahead. Number six, if equipment failure is not an option, spend the money. One of the, I guess, fads, it's probably more than a fad, because I do believe that God is using this technology. It's the multiple churches happening at the same time. There's one pastor preaching at one church, and either they record it and play it back at another church across town the next Sunday, or in some cases it's actually streaming where it's live. They might have a worship band at each of, let's say, three satellite campuses, satellite buildings, where they have their own worship band, their own on-site pastor. But when we get to the message, it's the main pastor at the main campus, and you're actually watching them on the big high-definition screen with the IMAX screens. Well, the example there is, if you're determined that there's no way that halfway through his message one of those other sites goes down, what are you going to do? I heard the example. Fortunately, when this did happen, there was a pastor on site that knew enough about the subject, got up and finished the message. But if that's one of the areas that you determine, you know what, there's just no way that can happen, or if you're recording your messages and it's critical, it needs to be recorded, I'd recommend redundancy. You just got to spend the money. Buy that second fiber run. Have a RAID hard drive system, two of everything, to make sure that if one goes down, it's going to happen. But that's just something to consider. If it's something that failure is not an option, spend the money, and that's the only way you're going to do your best to make sure that it's not going to fail. If I flip the page, see, there's a suggestion to choose your level of quality. You could run down to your local store and pick something off the shelf. Something I would not recommend. You could go to your local music industry store, which I have done and do recommend for certain situations. The third option then is the broadcast professional. Not so much that, okay, here's three of them, which one do you want to pick? It's more in your thought process. Think through this. Think through this. Do you want to go and keep it local? Do you just want to walk into a store and buy it, or would you like to have a contractor help you? In the professional side, it may take a contractor to implement that type of quality equipment. If I had to pick one, I would be somewhere between two and three, somewhere between just running down to my local guitar center, which, by the way, they have some. I'll use the term music industry. Music industry tends to be a little bit on the cheaper side of professional. They're going. The manufacturers are going for quantity. They're going to get their money return on just selling a bunch of them, and so the quality tends to be a little lower to trade in at a price point that hopefully everybody can afford and just sell a bunch of them. Where if you start looking at prices of some professional equipment, you're going to look at that dollar figure and you're going to be like, oh my, that is an expensive piece. But there is something to say about professional. An example would be at these conferences that I've been doing, we've been trying to record onto, over the years, record them onto CD or tapes originally, MP3, and we would bring our own recording equipment. Well, our recording equipment that we bring is consumer-grade recording equipment, which instead of having a balanced audio connector on the back of it, has an RCA, which is unbalanced. So we plug it into the audio system, and then all of a sudden, we get the 60-cycle hum that shows up in the system. So I go to the contractor. I said, hey, can you get rid of that? And he goes, well, you know what? I don't think we're introducing that into your system because we, this is a true story, we just hired a guy to spend a week, and all he did was went through the grounding scheme of our system and made sure that our system was not going to have any hum. That just happened. And so we bring it here, we plug it in. What did you plug in? Is there something you may have plugged in? And so I said, you know what? I think there's a CD recorder. We went over, looked. Sure enough, it was a consumer-grade piece that because it was unbalanced, it actually created a ground differential and created the hum. So you aren't necessarily going to buy. Every piece is going to be a professional-grade balanced input on all your audio equipment. But it is something to consider. And if you don't want the problem of ever having to deal with it, you don't want to have to troubleshoot that 5 minutes before the beginning of a seminar or a conference, you may want to consider spending the money and going with the professional. So I would go somewhere in the middle. I will make a comment about buying local. I had in the past had said I would spend 10% more on a piece of equipment if I could buy it local. Part of the reason would be if you can work out a loaner agreement with the local music industry dealer. So if your power amp goes down, give them a call. They'll give you a loaner until they can get it repaired. That's worth something. Where if you buy, you know, you buy it out of town and you don't have a loaner type thing, you may be down an amp. So anyway, a discussion for you to consider when you're thinking about purchasing. Let's jump into maintaining your sound equipment. Because you may have found out equipment doesn't last forever, even though you would love it to. Some of the old sound systems that were put into the older cathedrals and marble buildings may seem like they last forever because they're ancient. They've been in there for so long. But we are talking about matter. We are talking about components that eventually something in a piece of equipment, as it gets more and more complex, your chance of it failing becomes greater. So there are things that we need to do to maintain them. One of the recommendations that this church has given me over the years is to do a 10% budget, 10% of the value of your equipment for maintenance and replacement. I have to confess, I have not done that. I have not recommended that. Our pastor is the kind of guy, you need it, go buy it. So I haven't felt like I had to press that 10%. But that's something I think is a good idea, because somewhere down the road you are going to have to repair or replace, upgrade your equipment. So just a suggestion. Number two there is to implement a maintenance schedule. Part of the reason I wasn't sure I wanted my friends from my church in this room is they will hear me say things that I'll recommend that I'm not doing. So part of it is this is something that I'm reminding myself should really be done. And one of them is this maintenance schedule. Maybe a little more critical in an install because when you go down here, we look at cleaning. If you look at filters, you may have a power amp locked away in a closet somewhere that you just never see. It's on the second floor. It just, you have a remote power switch, and so you turn it on. It's up there doing its thing. You don't ever worry about it. You don't ever think about this power amp up there or rack of power amps. But there's dust flying around in there, and you go up one day, and you're like, hey, the amp shut down. You look, and you look at the filter, and it's just packed full of dirt. So one of the ways that can help with that is actually to create a schedule. Send somebody up there once a month, clean out the filter, or make sure the ventilation's happening in there, or the air conditioning system is working. Probably have some kind of sensor that if it does go down, it'll alert you. But a schedule will help to make sure that things are looked at, you're not just assuming they're going to just sit there and take care of themselves. I have a suggestion there to use a paintbrush to brush off your consoles. This is something I've seen done. We don't do it. I don't have a paintbrush. I used to have one in the case and run it over the console. A soft bristled brush works great to get rid of the dust. One of the with digital consoles, there's actually less faders. It's not quite as critical, but dust will fall into a fader. You may find them being rough or eventually not working at all. So one of the things I recommend is a paintbrush to just lightly go over your console. Tape residue from cables. I think this is where I will recommend no masking tape. I've done it in the past in a pinch, but you take it outside and you get a 90-degree day and have fun cleaning off that glue. The other thing that I've found out is electrical tape, which I've been using for board tape. Works better than masking tape, but I did find it does also leave a residue that sometimes is difficult to remove. So I found this roll, actually. I didn't buy it. I found it at a conference. Somebody left it on the floor. This is board tape, and it's a low residue. If you put tape on your console to label your channels, I would recommend board tape.
So there's a cheaper alternative than a lot of us use, which is blue painter's tape.
That also works. Yes, I have used that.
It's almost the same adhesive that's on.
Yes.
That costs about twice as much per roll.
So blue painter's tape, and the blue painter's tape I'm familiar with just has part of it as adhesive. The rest is...
You can go and get all different width, but we get the narrow width.
That has glue behind the whole thing? There you go.
Use magnets.
I've seen those used. I've tried to stay away from magnets. Hard drives are becoming more and more popular in racks these days. And the magnetic field and hard drives. Yeah, and they may work. Analog consoles, I think there's a place for them. Digital consoles, when it shows up, what your channel is. I've tried to stay away from them. I'm sure there's guys that use them. I see them used. Inspections, I think, is important. Broken hardware, especially on like a speaker stand. It's good every now and then to take a look at the plastic hardware on speaker stand, make sure it's not cracked, that the clamps are actually tightening. Because if we get into this whole safety issue too. If your hardware's got an issue, you may be hurting somebody if it falls over. But I would suggest visually inspecting your hardware, making sure that it's all working. Microphones, I think it'd be a good idea to listen to them every now and then. I've chosen to use Shure SM58s all around just because it's a consistent microphone. But over the years, I'm finding out that we have a few of them that, they just sound dull. In fact, I think I brought one of them. Yeah, this is probably one of our original ones. Very dependable, has worked very well. But I would recommend listening to your microphones every now and then, and you may, we'll talk about this later, relegate it to a practice room somewhere. I will tell you this little story about the Shure SM58. When I went to buy one of these, the guy said, there's a guy that's been using one of these for like 10 years for a comedy act, and he comes in about 3 times a year and buys the windscreen. And I'm like, why does he buy the windscreen? What about the microphone? He said, part of his act is to take his SM58 and hold it like this and drop it. And I don't know how many times a week he does that and what his floors are. Some of them, I'm sure, are concrete. And he just drops his SM58. So the microphone continues to work the windscreen just looks pretty bad after a while, and so he replaces it. So a little side thing, the SM58 just works. Just a little tidbit there. You might want to look at your cabinets and your cases. If it looks like a corner was damaged or bent on the case, it could be that thing took a nice, the piece inside took a shock. I had worked in shipping for a while, and one of the things we used to have to do was inspect the box when it came off the truck. And if we saw a corner damage, we had to notate it because there's a good chance, we didn't have time to test the piece inside till later, good chance that it got some damage. So another inspection would be just to take a look at your cabinets, your bass amp, your guitar amp. Does it look like, wow, that corner, I don't remember that there's being a chip out of that corner or a dent in the grill. I wonder what, you know, what kind of treatment it had taken. It may give you a clue as to, something that would give you a clue that there's a problem. You may want to test it out. Repair under C. I'd recommend that you label something that doesn't work. I've learned this the hard way by taking a microphone that cable that did not work and wrapping it up the same way that I wrap up all my other cables and throwing it across the stage, and it gets picked up with all the good cables. And next job I'm on, I'm grabbing cables, and why doesn't this microphone work? And realize, oh, it's the cable that didn't work last time. Why would it work today? So make sure that you label it. I don't know if it's, you wrap it a different way, you put a big knot in it, you wrap a big tape around it, but indicate, put some type of indication on a piece that you know stopped working to alert yourself so you remember, oh, that's right, that didn't work, or somebody else, just to be courteous to someone else who may have to use that piece, and be nice to, for them to know that it didn't work the last time. Also, taking care of repairing things in a timely manner. I did bring this piece along just to show you. This is an example. This is a microphone I sold my brother, who has four of these. Well, this is one of the four, and the cable broke. And I said, you know, I feel responsible. I sold it to you. I should probably go get it fixed for you. So I took it to a guy to repair. When it came back, actually, it was intermittent. When it came back, it didn't work at all. Then I really felt responsible. I was like, I wonder what the guy did to it. So I told my brother, I'll take care of it. It's been over a year that I've had this microphone. I keep thinking, I take it with me. It's in my car. Oh, maybe I'll run past that repair place or run into my friend who's in, maybe he can quickly do it, you know, in an hour or so. And so this is something I would not recommend you do. Promise your brother you're going to fix his microphone, and a year later you still have it. Fortunately, my brother is very forgiving and has a backup, a lapel backup. But try to repair things in a timely manner. And I did talk about the loaner policy. If you don't have the opportunity to have a backup, a duplicate sitting in a rack somewhere or in a closet somewhere, consider doing the a loaner policy with your seller. Something that this church does, as well as Covenant Fellowship up in Philadelphia, they have a web-based, I think it's a blog, that the techs are asked to enter a report after they're done mixing on a Sunday. So they'll just, you know, mixing went well, I had a little trouble with feedback on this vocal, there was an intermittent problem with this. It's a way of a logging problems that may have occurred. It's a way of giving the person responsible for maintaining a heads up. By logging it, you may see that there's a minor problem that if we take care of it now, won't turn into a major problem later on. So something I've considered, I have not taken the time to do that, but it's something I've seen done, very helpful. It also takes information that one of your techs learned from a Sunday, and if you're mixing the next Sunday, it's like, there's something he learned about whatever, and could be beneficial for you as well. So it's just a suggestion you may want to consider. A web-based blog that you're asking your folks to enter a report each time they mix. Equipment maintenance and personal safety, I believe, do go hand in hand. We're talking about taking care of our equipment, safety of the equipment, but a lot of these also carry over into bodily safety, especially when I'm dealing with some of the major conferences where I'm hanging things between 20 and 30 points, meaning that's where we hang it out of the steel, in the air over people's heads. You just can't be sloppy about it. You know, you have to make sure you do your homework. You've done the proper planning. You have the proper people in place. One of my examples of this is in the electrical side. I would recommend that you use the licensed electrician anytime you're dealing with electricity. I used to try to tie in my own tails. You know what that means? If you need more than what you can find off of the electrical outlets in a room, you go to the breaker box and you actually tie in hot cable into the breaker panel where you have your own distribution, where you have your own breaker panel. I used to do that myself. I don't do it anymore. I hire electricians to do that. I just don't want to take the risk of hurting myself or somebody else. But one of the things, because electricity can kill. Jim Cowan just told me on Saturday about a guy who actually was electrocuted with a 9-volt battery. And you're like, how can a 9-volt battery kill you? And it turns out the guy was trying to decide the resistance. I don't quite understand it, but he licked his fingers when touching two poles of a 9-volt battery, and it just happened to go through his heart, and a 9-volt battery killed him. So if a 9-volt battery can kill you, anytime you're dealing with 110, 220, or get up into the higher voltage, higher amperage, please... get somebody who knows what they're doing. Another example.
They don't do the tongue test.
Well, that will work because it's not going through your heart. It's just going through your tongue. speaking of 9 volts, these days we've been using wireless systems with double A's, so you can't do this. But when they were using 9 volts, 4-day conference, we go through 30, 60, you know, it would be 150 9-volt batteries because every session you put a new battery in, you have wireless microphones, you got wireless ears. And so what the contractor would do is hook them together in series, and then just for anyhow, at the end of the conference, they'd see, what would that be, voltage? Yeah, it would be voltage, just to see what kind of voltage they had at the end of it. So because some of those batteries still have good life in them, it's just we're not going to take a chance on the next session. I didn't discourage do-it-yourself stuff. I spent probably a half hour looking for this power strip in my garage, which I found in a case maybe 3 weeks ago. And I think what I did is I'm like, oh man, I don't ever want to see this again, and threw it away. But I wish I would have kept it just to remind myself and you all. This is something I thought I would do back, this was probably 15 years ago. I didn't like the idea of having to plug extension cords in different outlets to different parts of the stage. I thought, well, why don't I just make one nice long extension cord with outlets in the middle? So I took these cheapest I could find power strips and took screws out, took out the cord that was there, bought myself some SJ wire, put a plug on the end, went to the first one, threw the box, drilled a hole, went out the box to the next one. I had like four of these in a row. So one Sunday morning we're setting up and all of a sudden I hear this sizzle, and I smell the smoke, and I'm like, what was that? It turned out that I guess one of the wires either was not put in correctly or laid differently inside it, and when one of my guys plugged a power amp in, the ground connection went through a hot, so it was hot to ground, and burn up a DC-300. Anybody know what a ground DC-300 is? It's a great power amp in its day. It fried the thing. So, the money I saved by doing it myself, by buying the cheapest power strips, we could have bought several good power strips or had paid an electrician to build me a good one with quad boxes and good Hubble connectors on it. So now there may be some folks in your church that have some electrical ability. Maybe they're actually licensed electricians. And yes, do it yourself. Give them the job. But just would like you to be cautious when we're talking about electricity. A UPS... More and more equipment these days have little computer processors in them. I just decided I was just going to throw this in. A UPS that has a battery in it. Some of these actually take voltage off the battery rather than just switching over to it when the power goes down. But this has saved us in our church. We have, every now and then we'll have a brownout, and because we have a digital console, it takes a little while for it to boot back up again. And after we've installed that, we have a brownout. Power amps go down, of course. Console stays up. When the power amps come back up, we're good to go. But it is a way of protecting some of your more sensitive equipment using a UPS. And, of course, the static electricity, be aware of that. If you're getting shocked, you know, when you're touching stuff, it's probably a good idea to try to remedy that. Some of your electrical equipment may not like it either. Some of the electrical equipment is robust enough to handle it, but there's some that would be affected by static electricity. Use of cases and covers. This has probably more to do with the portable side. Protection, cases and covers. I would recommend if you are moving equipment around, to make sure you got good cases, good covers, because you can ding and nick and bend and bang equipment, and it may affect its functionality, but also if you want to resell it in the future, it would keep its value if you protected it well. This crazy thing about cases, they're probably not worth anything on the resale. You know, when you go to sell it, it's like, well, I'm throwing the case in. I mean, I'd like to sell the case. I would like this much. And nobody really wants to pay for a case on used equipment. But I do think it's worth it by keeping it protected while you do own it. Use of quality wheels. As I get older, wheels have become my friend. Things just push a lot easier. And I try to push everything on wheels rather than carry these days. Things just go a lot better. But good casters is important. If you've got casters that are wobbling or not turning right, the chance of flipping something over, breaking the equipment and also yourself, I just encourage you to use good quality wheels. Good properly placed handles. There's a company locally who builds their own speaker cabinets. They weigh about between 300 and 400 pounds a piece. Didn't put any handles on them. And he knows how to handle them. His guys that he works for him know how to handle them, and it works well, but you know, I need handles on stuff that I'm going to carry. Your hands are slipping on the sides. It's just important to have good handles and properly positioned. If you're going to build your own cases or if you buy them, they probably have handles in them already. And encourage you to take time to replace something that you take out of a case. Return it. You know, your dad, I still can hear my dad say, everything has its place. One of the sad pictures that I have in my mind is one day I went to the cable case, and as I'm picking up cables, I see one of these E6s laying in the cable case without its case. The E6s are great microphones, but they can break, and so it depends how many pounds of copper are laying on top of it. I just encourage you to make sure they go back into their cases. Careful handling, number three in this section. One of the things that I recommend when we're tearing down our system on a Sunday is to start with the sensitive, high-priced pieces. So we do the microphones first. We do the headphones first and ears first, direct boxes. Because if you're going to wrap a cable, but there's something connected on the other end of it, and you start wrapping it, and you might pull a microphone off a stand or whatever. So that's just... In your teardown process, I would encourage you to, something I've learned, it is important to start with the microphones and the expensive stuff first. You may even want to lay out your stage in the layers. I've been trying to do this. Power first, microphone second, and we're using Aviom, so the data on top, because we have so many cables on our stage, it can be a nightmare trying to wrap the cables, pull them, separate them at the end of a service. So you may want to think in layers as you're laying out your stage, so that may be easier to wrap up. Be no heroes, please. This company that does have cases, these speaker cabinets without handles, there's one guy who wants to be a hero, and he will grab this thing by himself. He's a big guy, but if it's something that's heavy, be a man. Is that the word I want? Be a humble man and ask for help. Rather than hurt yourself or it fall and break it, if it's something heavy, ask for help. And if need, make a second trip. rather than I'm just going to grab as many as I can and I just got to go from here to there, I'd encourage you to make a second trip if necessary. One thing we've learned is try to discourage children from being on the stage. We meet in a middle school. Kids love to get up on stage. They like to dance, like to run around, whatever. But we have a rule that they're not there until all the equipment's off the stage. We have one father who, and I mean, I really understand this. A kid can take the gaff tape off the cables. And I want to let the dad do that as if he's supervising, to let his kid go up, pull all the tape. They like to see how big the ball gets at the end of the teardown. But children on the stage, they can trip over something. They can pull something off a stand. Most of the time, children like to run rather than walk. And you're starting to pull up cables, and so they're not like nicely taped down any longer. And so the chances of them tripping over something is greater. As we're discussing what type of a building we may be building, one of them is a multi-purpose room, which means you have a stage with some high-priced equipment on it on a Sunday and Sunday afternoon throughout the week. It's also going to become a gymnasium. Well, there's going to be basketballs, volleyball, soccer, whatever. Somehow you need to protect. So that's whether that's put it away or, one of the things we've been looking at is actually a net or a curtain that's dropped that will withstand, a kicked soccer ball, so that you could leave the equipment set up. That's just something for you to consider. Cable management. I think we did talk a little bit about that. Over under. I'll just throw that out as a good way to manage your cables. Not so much from taking care of your equipment because you're basically wrapping it the same way each time. If I found if you have a right-hander wrapping a cable 1 week and a left-hander the next week, and you're not doing an over-under, sometimes you'll actually get some twists. And for one, they're hard, they're unruly. But second, if you get different twists in it each week, your cable just won't last quite as long. And I discourage you from the old knot. When you're done with your loop, you take it through and pull a knot because you're kinking the cable more than it really should be kinked. We've been using Velcro and also tie line. Thought I had some tie line with me to secure the cables because you do want them individual in the cable case, because if you don't have something to secure them, you're reaching in, you're grabbing one, you're blowing two or three out, and then to try to separate them becomes a challenge. So we do want to secure them to themselves, but I discourage you from the old let's just put a knot in it or the over the elbow thing and then the knot thing. Use tape, cable runners, or cable ramps. I don't know if in your areas the fire marshal is cracking down or finally getting to what the code requires, but up our way, I this spring was told I cannot run a microphone cable on the floor without one of these cable ramps. I don't know if you're familiar with the yellow jackets. I don't know, foot wide, 16 inches wide. They're about maybe 3 inches high, and they have a door that flips up with troughs. I'm not sure if it's insurance or what's driving this, but there's a good chance if it's becoming a trend, you may have to be looking at some of that in your permanent installs or temporary. We haven't had them visit where we meet at this point yet, but some of the other events that I do, that has become consideration. But to have them secure, meaning they're not dangling somewhere where somebody's tripping over them, or you're wheeling a cart over them, or big event, outdoor event, you're driving your car over your snake or over your cables. Just keep that in mind. This is not a restaurant. I think I could pretty safely say we don't want any sodas sitting on our consoles. Water's one thing in a console, but the sugar, acidy stuff, these consoles just don't like that. Donut powder, encourage you to, if you got to have your donut on a Sunday morning, put it over on another case. Eat it over there rather than at your console. And watch out for greasy hands. One of the things that I try to keep, our children do not need these anymore, but I do. And I've just continued to have my wife buy these, and I keep baby wipes around to make sure that I keep my hands clean. With more and more display screens on equipment, touch screen, if you got greasy hands and you're touching your screen after a while, you're going to be like, what's behind that smudge mark? So one of the things that I'd recommend doing is keeping your hands clean. And I guess we got to quickly go through the upgrading. One is to determine the motive for an upgrade. There are several motives, and this is just throwing some of these out for you to discuss. There's new technology out there. I think we ought to upgrade. That might be one of the considerations. Digital consoles, in-ear monitors might be one of the things. Effective use in another church. You may have come here and saw something being implemented, or you went to a conference, saw somebody trying to sell a piece of equipment. It's like, you know what? I've seen another church use that. I think we should have it. Pastor might be asking for it. Pastor would like to try something new. Can we have a new piece of equipment? Maybe the program actually is driving a real need for an upgrade to your system. Or maybe it's just the end of life. This console's been in here since 1986, and you know what? There's three faders and channels that aren't working anymore. It's just time to upgrade. So there's different reasons for upgrades. Here's just a few of them for you to discuss. It could be, when do we upgrade? Maybe, like in our case, we're considering a new building. It's the time to consider buying new equipment. Rather than dragging the old equipment and trying to put it in a new building, it's maybe the time to do some of those upgrades. You may have a church that's expanding. We need some more equipment because we just have more people now. We went into the overflow room out the back. You know, we opened up the dividing that wall, and we just need more equipment for that. Or you have a church plant, and so we're going to send some of the equipment to the church plant. So now's a good time for us. Maybe the other way around. Why don't we upgrade now so we have some equipment to give to the church plant? Moving to contemporary service. If you've been traditional, we'd like to add that contemporary Saturday night. Maybe a good time to consider going with an upgrade. Or if you just had extra money at the end of the year. God was blessing your church. Some of the other equipment in the building, maybe the air conditioner stayed working for another year and that you budgeted to replace, and we have a little money at the end of the year. Maybe it's time to consider where we might be able to upgrade. Or maybe there has just been some unreliable equipment. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Well, maybe it is time to go for that upgrade. What to upgrade? Some unreliable equipment. Weakest link in the chain. Jim Cowan made this suggestion. There's not really a good reason to buy a $1,000 vocal microphone if the speakers that you're using would not reproduce the difference between a $100 microphone and a $1,000 microphone. So make sure that you're thinking through your whole chain, and when it's time, when there is opportunity to upgrade, you want to, but you can't upgrade the whole thing. Pick the weakest link, the piece of equipment that, if I replace this, it's going to help overall, rather than you know, just picking one that may not affect it. Technology improvements may be a reason to make an upgrade. Digital consoles may be a reason. We were just talking at lunch about if you got multiple services and you're rehearsing on a Thursday, but there's a meeting on Friday. You're rehearsing on a Thursday for a Sunday morning service, but there's also a meeting on Friday and Saturday night. There's this changing the console back and forth. Digital consoles with being able to recall is a great advantage. Have a grand scheme in mind. I would recommend that as you're thinking about upgrading, that you think ahead. One of the things that I've tried to do is with a mix wizard, Alan Heath Mix Wizard, that we had used as our monitor console for a while, is now our rehearsal console. Or maybe the second one we had is now at a church up in Toronto. You may have a children's ministry that you think down the road will as it grows, it's going to need a console. So maybe now the console I plan to buy will be that one down the road. So think strategically as you're planning beyond just what the immediate needs are. Plan for several smaller systems. One of them may be if you have some smaller systems that if you put them together, you have similar speakers, you put them together, you could actually do an outdoor event. Or one of the ideas from James Dreyer from up where Pat Sabel is in Canada was that he recommends that when a church buys a system, they buy a certain type of system. So when they get together for a regional, they could just bring all their speakers together and they can hang them and do room for 3,000 rather than 300. So again, just something for you to consider, suggesting that you may want to stick with the same manufacturer when you're purchasing. Different manufacturers will try to market the advantage. Sometimes the advantage over one piece, and over another and going with a different manufacturer may not be as advantageous as sticking with a manufacturer whereby the warranties, customer support may be standardized, and you may be able to swap out for repair. If you have a equipment that's standard over multiple ministries in your church, you know that you can pull one from another and swap out whatever. It may require less training. One ministry has a different type of piece of equipment and you actually need to bring them in a pinch, and it's like, oh, what's this? I've never had a chance to run this one. If you stick with a certain manufacturer or a particular model, you can actually cross. Some of your volunteers can be used in other areas as well as, and this was an idea that I got from the WFX, was maybe sticking with this example is the Yamaha platform of digital consoles. Let's think of ages. You have a children's ministry, you're teaching a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old how to run an O1V, the bottom end of the Yamaha line of consoles. There's differences, but there's not a lot of difference between that and the DM1000. So maybe you have a DM1000 in the youth ministry, and you get up to a M7 or a 5D up in the main sanctuary. And so if you think you can stick with one manufacturer, stick with one design of layout of console, or like the studio manager in the Yamaha is across all platforms. So if they get to use the computer interface for the digital console and the small one, they can use pretty much the same one in the larger console. I think I'll jump to this bottom one. We need to remember that we are supporting the mission of the pastor and the worship leader at our local church. I did read this morning, looked at concordance to see where the word steward was used, and Isaiah uses the example, or there's an example in Isaiah where God has asked Isaiah to speak to a guy who had dug out his own tomb. He was a steward of a property or of a man's household, and that he had dug out a tomb for himself. And I began to think, I don't think that we're planning to plot out our own graveyards in our churches. You know, we're not going to go out and find our own grave plot. But one of the temptations in working with tech in a church is to try to think, how is this going to benefit me? What can I gain out of serving in this area, or if we purchase this piece of equipment? I'll use a personal example. The temptation was, if I get a digital console for the church, I will be more marketable in the industry because somebody's going to need, be able to run a digital console, and maybe I'll be hired to do a local event. That was a temptation that I faced. So just want to make you aware that when you're asked to help make these decisions, this is not about you. This is not about me. This is about serving the worship leader, the pastor, the church. And just be aware of that temptation, I believe, is there for us to try to benefit ourselves in some of these choices. The temptation would be there. I'd encourage you to keep up with technology so that when the worship leader comes to you and says, hey, I'd like to try something new, you're not scrambling, well, let's see what's out there. You already have done some homework, and you can, in a timely fashion, say, hey, you know what? I saw a church doing this, or I read about this. I know where I can get a hold of a loaner. We could try one out for a Sunday. So in a sense, encourage you to be proactive, thinking ahead, keeping up with technology, so that you're ready and available when you're being asked to help with some of these decisions. And appeal humbly to the leadership when they may be suggesting something that doesn't seem to fit in your line of experience, in your recommendations. Appeal humbly. We're here to serve. That doesn't mean we don't ever challenge. You know, we're just not, yes, sir, we'll do whatever you want. Because I do believe that God has made you stewards, another way that it's used in Scripture, of the gifts that you have. God has given you gifts. You have interest in this, and so you've been gleaning information. And so I do believe that there is a need for the suggestions that you're going to offer in purchasing and upgrading, even in caring for it. And if there is disagreement or a different choice, rather than just, you know, okay, whatever you say, humbly appeal, because it may save, not save, it may keep your congregation from spending endless money and being good stewards of the finances and the equipment that we have. So hopefully this has been helpful. I'll just open up to some quick, just a short amount of time for questions from the information that we talked about here. Does anybody have any? This may have sparked a question as we've been discussing this. Yes?
Very simple question. What do you suggest if you don't take residue? Because I've used to take one left.
Well, I know what works. And I was going to bring it along, and I thought, you know what, I better not, because I haven't done enough of it. I haven't had a lot of tape residue to remove, so I haven't used it enough to know if it's actually good for the cable. But Goof Off, WD-40, I've used that already. I know that works, whether or not...
Goof Off will tear up the rubber.
See, that's why I was wanting to be careful suggesting that, because that's pretty... nasty stuff. It does work, but it might deteriorate the rubber and the other chemicals in the cable.
Golf grip solvent.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Golf grip solvent.
Golf grip.
So if you use good golf grip solvent with tape, it won't mess up the rubber because it uses up the rubber golf grip.
So it's actually the glue, or it's the...
It's the liquid to make...
To clean the grips.
Yeah. No, to put the grips on, it makes the tape not stick. So you can slide it off.
Oh, okay.
It'll take the sticky off. A lot of it's the same thing.
I'm not a golfer, so I wasn't familiar with that. But there you go. That could work as well.
Since we all use batteries, have you ever tried using a lot of rechargeable batteries? Is it continue to buy 9 volts? Is there a problem with buying... I just don't know.
Yeah, I haven't... I haven't looked at this in a while. Maybe 8 years ago, I did a little study on it. My experience at that point was rechargeable batteries. I don't know if there's any difference now, but they're a little less voltage than just a straight out alkaline. And granted, you do save money in the long run by using rechargeables, as long as you don't lose them and you make sure you recharge them. But my experience has been, now that we're going to double A's, these events that I'm doing are, some of these major ones, are of the magnitude that the few cents I'm saving between a rechargeable AA or just going out and buying an alkaline AA, the amount I'm saving is not worth me taking a risk that there's not enough voltage and the mic dropped out in the middle. So I'm, at this point, I'd like, it was actually a recommendation that was sent to me for this seminar. I thought maybe I should investigate a little more. It was a church in Knoxville who's actually using rechargeables, and they're working fine. Is that where you're from?
No.
But you've been using them?
Rechargeables, too. On double A's, we use them 9 volts.
9 volts are just not enough. Yeah,
the
double A's might.
You said you're probably using double A rechargeables.
See, I think rechargeable technology is probably advanced over the 8 years or whatever, and so there's a chance that we may be able to look at that again.
We're getting like 1.4 volts out of AA, too.
1.4?
Yeah, it starts off low, but then it'll drop off faster instead of going down slowly like an alkaline well.
So when the meter starts to drop, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if that's in the middle of a session, I've. Oh, the other thing I should say is double A's are great. Half used ones. Give to your kids for their Walkmans, and that's what I do with them. I'm sorry.
Do you ever use the high output electronic?
I have not. I have seen those.
Expensive.
They are expensive.
And you don't know when they're going to go bad.
Is that the same deal with those?
Yeah, we get. Fry's has 100 double A's for $20.
Alkalines.
Yeah. Yeah, so the real active life of one on any Sunday morning is less than an hour. So, you know, because we switch them up between services and they're cheap.
Yeah.
Other than landfill issues, I mean, that's the only conscious thing that bothers me about using them.
Yeah.
There's also that some of the manufacturer's warranties don't cover alkaline.
If you use a rechargeable in their piece of equipment, they won't cover it.
Now, there's some manufacturers. We use AKG mics, and they're ones that are built for it and with the charging stations. We do that, but even after about a year and a half, you end up replacing the rechargeable battery anyway.
Oh, you do?
It gets shorter and shorter. But they have indicators on there. I wouldn't use a rechargeable if it doesn't have an indicator.
Yeah. And I would encourage you, if you're replacing wireless equipment, look at AA equipment. I haven't looked at stuff if there's even 9-volt stuff out there anymore, new stuff to put 9 volts in them, on the lower end stuff. Most of them are going to the double A's, and you can get more. I guess the transmitters are just getting that much more efficient that they can power them off of a pair of double A's, or sometimes even one double A that you can get by with up to 8 hours, as opposed to a 9-volt that lasts you maybe 2 services. So. Well, this has been great. Hopefully some of this information will be beneficial to you. Again, this probably may have stirred up some questions or just more topics of discussion. Grab myself, Jim Callen, Dave Wilcox. Understand Fred Baumert's here as well from Covenant Fellowship Church. He'd be around to answer any questions. We're here to help with the mistakes we've made. If we can let you know that we've tried, it didn't work, and save you from having to go through that experience, it would have been worth our time. So. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a seminar by Daryl Winger, which was given at our Worship God 2008 conference. It has been made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. Sovereign Grace is primarily devoted to planting and caring for churches. We also hold conferences, train leaders, and publish books, music, and audio and video messages. For more information, visit www.sovereigngraceministries.org. Or call us at 301-330-7400.